And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Wednesday, April 17. 38 degrees here and some clouds in Old Town. We're also reporting 40 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Keyboy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Wednesday to you. We're halfway through the work week, and when it comes to our weather today, it won't be too different from what we saw yesterday, but there is a weak system that is going to clip the northern half of the state, and we have seen a few light showers across northern Utah this morning, and we've even seen a few light snow showers way up in the high country, and we'll hold on to that 20% chance of seeing showers in the Wasatch back through the bulk of the day today. But that just means there's a better chance that you get through the day dry than you see wet weather. Just don't be surprised if at any point today that there will be a light shower that finds you. Overall, we'll see mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies outside of any chance for wet weather. And with that system that's clipping the northern half of the state, that's going to keep our temperatures very similar to what we saw yesterday. So that's going to result in a daytime high right around 50 degrees in Park City, which is very seasonal for this time of year, while Heber will see a daytime high in the upper 50s. As we move into tonight, that weak system completely clears, and we'll be looking at mostly clear skies by the overnight, however, with more of a northwesterly flow. Tonight will be chillier compared to what we're waking up to this morning, as the overnight low falls into the middle 20s throughout the Wasatch back. So definitely a little bit chillier compared to what we've seen the last couple of nights. Then by tomorrow afternoon, we're right back to mostly sunny skies. Daytime high should come in right around 50 degrees in Park City, should be back in the upper 50s down in the Heber Valley. Then Thursday night won't be as cold compared to what we're going to see tonight, with the overnight lows dropping into the low and mid 30s. Once we get past Thursday, we're going to start to introduce more of a southerly flow, and our temperatures will begin to warm up. We'll see mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies on Friday, with a daytime high in the middle 50s, mid 30s again on Friday night under partly cloudy skies. Then with the weak system moving in from the west, we could see a few isolated pop-up showers in the afternoon on Saturday. Otherwise, we'll see mostly sunny skies with a daytime high coming in at 58 degrees. And then by Sunday into early next week, daytime highs will likely be in the low 60s. We should see 61 on Sunday, 62 on Monday, and there's a chance that we could sneak into the middle 60s by Tuesday. And by Tuesday, there'll also be more potential for a few afternoon pop-up showers and maybe even a rumble of thunder. So we'll be looking at seasonal conditions the next couple of days, just a slight chance for a stray shower today. Then we'll see mostly sunny skies to close out the work week, and then those temperatures will continue to warm from the weekend into early next week, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Camas resident and president of the Lung Cancer Foundation of America, Kim Norris. She has details about a new drug that was approved by the FDA in the clinical trials to help boost a fundraising campaign. Then co-founder of the Park City Song Summit, Ben Anderson, revealing the lineup for this year's summit. And MC of the Follies, Tom Clyde, will be joined by the director of the Follies this year, Mark Conklin, with a preview of this year's Follies and an update on ticket sales. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Mike Rogge, owner, editor, and publisher of The Mountain Gazette. This will be the first part in an upcoming series looking at chronicling life in a mountain town. Then the long days of sunlight mean lots of UV rays. Dermatologist Dr. Jen Haley talks about how to protect your skin. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life. And of course, you can hear The Mountain Life every Wednesday morning between 9 and 10. Taking a look at some local news now, the Park City School District has released an update on steps that it is taking to resolve concerns after a federal investigation found dozens of incidents of harassment in the school district. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on that.
The U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights investigated multiple harassment complaints in the Park City School District and found more than 180 reported incidents of student-to-student harassment from 2021 to 2023. It notified the district of its findings on March 20th, and the district subsequently signed a resolution agreement to resolve violations and compliance concerns. The district released an update on its progress in early April as Superintendent Jill Gilday apologized on behalf of the district.
As superintendent, I apologize for any instance where our district fell short of providing a nurturing and safe environment. Every student deserves to achieve to their full potential in a supportive setting.
The district says it's reviewing reported incidents from the 2022-23 school year to ensure affected students receive appropriate support. The district has also worked on revising policies and procedures related to harassment. It also says it anticipates sharing monthly updates on revisions, along with opportunities for public comment. In response to federal concern that there was no standard procedure for reporting harassment or record keeping, the district has created both reporting and investigation forms. The forums are available in English and Spanish and are being used throughout the district for new harassment incidents. The federal investigation also found the district's Title IX coordinator, who deals with gender equity in schools, was not notified of reported Title IX incidents, including sexual harassment. The district now has a Title IX compliance flowchart to clarify procedural steps. District administrators will get training on these documents this month. To ensure the public is aware of non-discrimination policies, the district has posted the information on its website. The district plans to update its non-discrimination policies and distribute them to all staff and families in the summer of 2024. However, Gilday said during the district's board meeting that the district is committed to more than just meeting the agreement's requirements. District staff want to create a welcoming culture at schools.
It is aiming to improve our school's atmosphere, making sure it's welcoming to all. Now, this does also include implementing disciplinary actions, restorative practices, and focusing on something called restorative justice.
She said as part of restorative justice, the district will seek to repair harm, rebuild relationships, and address root causes of behavior through education and accountability. Gilday then outlined some resources to help students and staff know how to respond to harassment. The model is to interrupt, ask, educate, and echo. That means those who hear biased remarks should interrupt and speak up in the moment. They should also ask why the statement was made. The individual can then educate others by explaining why a term, phrase, or action is offensive. Finally, students and staff should echo and repeat that harassing remarks are inappropriate. The district plans to continue sharing updates as it works to resolve harassment compliance concerns. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, a new drug has been approved by the FDA to treat lung cancer. On the phone to tell us more about that, as well as the clinical trials being done, I have Camas resident, who also serves as president of the Lung Cancer Foundation of America, Kim Norris. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, certainly. So maybe just start by telling us a little bit about this foundation, what it is you guys do, and how it was funded and founded.
Well, I started this foundation about 15 years ago. It's not like I grew up saying, oh, I'm going to start a lung cancer foundation when I grow up. But my husband passed away from lung cancer 25 years ago at the age of 47. Back then, I knew nothing about lung cancer. I met two other amazing lung cancer survivors. And we realized how underfunded lung cancer was in relation to its impact on public health. So just a couple of really brief statistics to lay the groundwork that most people don't realize about lung cancer, that it's the leading cause of cancer mortality. It kills more than breast, prostate, and colon cancers combined, and it kills 3 times as many women as breast cancer, yet it's severely underfunded in terms of research. Part of that is, I'm sure this won't surprise you, is the stigma surrounding lung cancer, the belief that you get it if you smoke. Well, unfortunately, that's not the case. If you have lungs, you're at risk for lung cancer. Think of your lungs as giant air filters. And every breath you take, you're taking in particles from the outside environment and bringing them inside your body into your lungs. And all it takes is one particle to corrupt one cell to get the process going. So we started the foundation with the primary mission of funding research for lung cancer. In particular, we bring in and we fund young and early career investigators. So we're trying to attract the best and the brightest into lung cancer. And I am so proud of the portfolio of young investigators we have funded, many who have become leaders in the lung cancer community, research community now. But the other two parts of the mission are, most people don't realize lung cancer needs funding for research. So we need to do public awareness. And the third part is, because we are very involved in the research side of lung cancer, we have access to the latest and greatest. So how can we take that information and educate patients and their families and loved ones on the journey, their journey of lung cancer? And most importantly, in the last 15 years, there has been tremendous, tremendous impact on the success of research in lung cancer. Lung cancer is leading the way in targeted therapies, immunotherapies, and people are living with stage four lung cancer 5, 10, 15 years with good quality of life because of research.
Mm. So how is this foundation different than what we've got, the American Lung Association or the American Cancer Society?
Good question. So both the American Cancer Society and the ALA, the American Lung Association, American Cancer Society is for all cancers. So if you make a donation to the ACS, it could go to breast cancer. It could go to whatever, not lung cancer specific. Same with the ALA. They are about lung health. And although part of that is lung cancer, most of their funding goes toward asthma, which is important, which is a great thing to do. Lung cancer is so complicated and so under-researched that it needs specialized organizations focused just on lung cancer.
Yeah, when you mention those numbers, though, in terms of mortality with lung cancer, any idea how many of those cases are not smoking related? I mean, right? I mean, it could just be it with part of your job, right? You're climbing in attics, you got asbestos, or, you know, crawling around with, you know, electricians, things like that.
Right? Absolutely. I'm sorry, I have my dog in the background. Absolutely. 65% of new diagnoses are in non-smokers, and a good 15 to 20% are in people that have never smoked at all. And the group that is increasing the most in lung cancer diagnosis are young women from the ages of 30 into their 40s that have never smoked. And we don't really know the answer to that as to why. That takes research.
Hmm. Are they vaping? I mean, is that considered smoking?
Anything where you're inhaling and bringing things into your lungs is not good. And if you, there's a belief that, you know, everybody probably gets some sort of cancer, that many of our immune systems are able to take care of it and get rid of it. Well, if you have an immune system that does not do that, you could get it and just not realize it. So the good news, bad news is, it's asymptomatic. You can have stage four and not realize it. Most diagnoses take place, 85% take place, and it's stage four. And we all know that any cancer is difficult to treat in advanced stages, which is why screening is so important.
What's that?
Screening. Lung cancer screening, like
screening, mammogram,
okay. Colonoscopy.
Hmm. So we also know that radon is the second largest cause of lung cancer after smoking. Is there a way to determine that it was radon induced?
Once you have it, it's kind of hard to determine how you got it. Hmm. But you are correct. Radon is the second leading cause. But also air pollution. And I say that especially regarding here in Utah and the Salt Lake City Valley. And you look at the smog and the air pollution there, and all of that is a contributing factor.
Hmm. Well, tell us about this new drug. What does it do?
Well, I think, I'm happy to say there are many new drugs right now. Yeah. And what we've learned about lung cancer, and now we're learning about other cancers too, but I'm just going to talk about lung cancer, is that we used to treat it back when my husband had it, for example. All you got was chemo radiation and it didn't work. And it was lung cancer was all alike. Then in the early 2000s, we learned that every lung cancer tumor is unique. and has a different driver mechanism that is causing it to grow. So number one, if you are diagnosed with lung cancer, the first thing you need to find out is what is unique about your lung cancer. And then there have been many drugs that are being discovered based on the driver mechanism that is causing your lung cancer to grow. And so many of the new drugs being approved are for that. Another component that has been very successful in lung cancer is immunotherapy, teaching your own body to recognize that the lung cancer cells are bad and getting your own body to attack the lung cancer. So we have, I think the treatment you're referring to is a combination of for early stage lung cancer, for surgery with a combination of chemo and immunotherapy seems to have a profound effect on making sure the lung cancer doesn't come back. And that's very successful. So there are just so many different researches going on, and it's exciting and hopeful.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned screening, and I mean, why would somebody go and get screened if it's asymptomatic?
Well, yeah, that's the challenge. Right now, the screening guidelines are only acceptable if you have a history of smoking. By the way, lung cancer is the only major cancer site of origin that requires screening based on not only age, but behavior. So if you are going to go get a colonoscopy, the recommendation is just based on your age when you should start getting it. It's not whether or not you had enough fiber in your diet. So the current screening that exists is a problem in that it only is recommended if you have a history of smoking and you're of a certain age group, which means anybody that hasn't smoked or hasn't been exposed has no reason to, and there's no way to do it. Again, I'm going to come back to research. There is a lot of research going on trying to identify early components of lung cancer. Imagine going into your annual physical and just having the nasal swab, and from that nasal swab being able to tell if you have early onset of lung cancer. That all takes research.
So that's not possible at this point?
No, but it's coming. I know several studies that are going on, and it looks very successful, but we're not there yet.
All right. Well, tell me, so apparently there were some trials underway, and it was kind of boosting a fundraising campaign. Tell me about this.
Well, this, we're really pushing on the screening aspect right now and the trials for screening capabilities. We have several fundraising and awareness programs. We like to try to combine them. For example, we're working with veterans groups. Imagine the exposure that veterans have when they're out on the battlefield to various chemicals and things that they're breathing in. They have a very high risk of lung cancer, yet a very low awareness about screening and getting screened. So right now we're doing a whole campaign on veteran awareness, and we're tying them into clinical trials that are going on to help identify different ways to get screened, as I was talking about earlier. And I'm very excited about that program and the possibility, if we can help veterans identify if they have lung cancer early, that's going to make a huge difference. So we have various campaigns going on where we're targeting certain groups that we know may have a higher risk of lung cancer and make sure they get screened and get access to clinical trials because clinical trials are, my belief is, the gold standard. You get excellent care and you get state-of-the-art treatment.
Okay. Anything else, Kim, you wanted to mention?
Just that if you or a loved one has been diagnosed with lung cancer, the important thing is get educated. You need to advocate for yourself. Because of the rapid development in research, many general oncologists aren't aware of the latest and greatest in treatments for lung cancer. So really try to educate yourself. I recommend people go to our website, which is lcfamerica.org. And we have a whole section on being newly diagnosed and what you need to know and how to help educate you. And there is hope. There's tremendous hope. And I know people that are living long, quality lives with advanced lung cancer.
Okay. Kim.
It's not the death sentence it used to be.
Okay. Well, that's good news. Kim, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kim Norris, again, resident of Camas, also the president of the Lung Cancer Foundation of America. This is KPCW. Well, tickets are on sale now for this year's Park City Song Summit, and on the phone with a preview of some of the acts, I have the co-founder of the Song Summit, Ben Anderson. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, glad to have you. So first of all, you've changed the dates to mid-August. Why the change?
Well, we had heard from a lot of people, please, please, could we do it a little earlier? Because kids are returning to school, and a lot of folks travel for that last day of summer, Labor Day weekend, and are not really ready to come back for a multi-day event. And so after lots and lots of people asked me, please try to change that, I did. And hopefully we are going to pick up some more of that summer sunshine and a lot more folks who will still be in town and won't have other commitments and will be able to join us this year.
Okay. The dates are August 15th through the 17th. You'll be back at Canyons Village?
Yes, we'll be back. And yesterday was our on sale, and we're super excited. We more than doubled our ticket sales from last year and quadrupled our ticket sales on day one from 2 years ago. So we are really off to a great start, and hope everybody will go to ParkCitySongSummit.com and see our lineup with Nathaniel Rateliff and Mavis Staples and My Morning Jacket, Larkin Poe. I mean, we've really got a stacked lineup of great labs and great performances this year.
Yeah, so that sounds like the date change may have been really good business for you then, huh?
Well, a lot of folks were able to come that wouldn't have been able to when it comes to not only the audience, but industry as well as artists themselves. So by being more in the flow of the summer touring, it was easier for some of these artists to route to us. And so fingers crossed, the ticket sales do reflect that so far, but we hope people will go in there and get them before they're gone.
Okay. So you're also going to be, like I mentioned, the Canyons Village, but also back on Main Street for a few shows?
Yes, we're very excited about that. So the opening night will be Mavis Staples. There will be a private dinner for a lot of the artists and industry that night. And then there'll be a performance upstairs of the local band Corey Mon, and then Mavis Staples. It's her, I'm going to LA tomorrow for her 85th birthday party. So I'm very excited that she asked to come back and join us. And then the great Sima Funk will close out the night with his band from Havana, Cuba on that opening night at the Marquee. So it's going to be a lot of fun that night. And then for the next two nights, we'll be at the cabin with our friends Junior and John Oswald. Every year they are great partners for us. And so we'll be there on Friday night with the Latinx band Making Movies and the new songwriting sensation Joby Riccio. She won the John Prine Ron songwriting contest last year. She's phenomenal. And then the next night we'll be on Main Street at the cabin too. So it's going to be a ton of fun. And we're just really thrilled. Our partners Stand Together Music and Canyons Village and Pendry and Park City Mountain, they all make it possible. So University of Utah's mental health program there's a lot of great local partners and a lot of great local 501c3s that we're working with that really make this event so special for our community and beyond.
Let's talk a little bit about that. I know in the past you've donated a portion of the proceeds to the More Than Music Foundation. So is that what will happen again?
Yes, that's correct. They will be rebranding as the Song Summit Foundation this year. They will be doing some programming. We will be supporting them. And then they, of course, have various labs and wellness activities in the village throughout the weekend. Some of the labs that they will be touching upon are really, really transformative. The Brass Without Boundaries, two amazing female brass players who play in Trey Anastasio's band and are wonderful solo artists in their own right. Carla Redding, Otis Redding's daughter, will be speaking to Sima Funk about her foundation and the legacy of Otis Redding. There will also be Wellness Village open to the public with free music coming off of the forum stage. And Wellness Village will have all kinds of really cool activations for the community that that are free for people who just want to come up and wander through the village on that Friday and Saturday weekend.
Yeah. How much were you able to raise for the foundation last year?
We raised over $250,000 last year in its first year. So we're looking to increase that even further this year in their year two. So, yeah, the foundation is something that we believe will have long-lasting impact in our community for underserved communities, offering scholarships and sponsorships for students, music students and music instructors from last year from Havana, Cuba, all the way to Salt Lake. Dozens of students and music teachers and instructors were able to come at no cost to them to be able to be a part of this event and in some cases to actually play in the event. We have this year a band of music students from Havana, Cuba who will be performing with students from the Trombone Shorty Foundation in New Orleans. They'll be doing second lines and pop-ups all over the place. And then we have a number of students from the Salt Lake area and the Park City area who we will be sponsoring to be able to come to the event to be in these labs, to be inspired by other musicians and some of their music heroes, and to really continue to push wellness and recovery and equity and opportunity as critical missions of Song Summit and the Song Summit Foundation.
Awesome. Well, you mentioned some of the big names. Who else are you looking forward to?
I'm really looking forward to Lark and Poe. They are sisters who just rock out, Leslie. They've got beautiful voices. They're great on the guitars. They are agents of social change, and we haven't had them, and so we're very, very excited to have them. And Tank and the Bangas, great band out of they're more than a band. They are really full of New Orleans artistry and they bring a cultural, a rhythmic and poetic piece and dramatic piece to Song Summit that we're really looking forward to. Eric Krasno's lineup of his dream team lineup this year is going to be really next level with Dwayne Betts and Natalie Cressman and Nikki Glaspie, who is a drummer for Beyonce, and Natalie Cressman and Jennifer Hartswick are the horns for Trey Anastasio. He has people in his lineup from String Cheese Incident. That's going to be super fun. But of course, My Morning Jacket and Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. Those are going to be some really great nights of music. But there's something about Sima Funk. I hope people who haven't seen Sima Funk live can come and enjoy that, because he is extraordinary and he's really blowing up out there in the world and out there doing great things for his community as well. So looking forward to all of those great things. And of course, my old friends, Jackie Green and Anders Osborne. Anders has a new album that he's dropping in 2 weeks, right before Jazz Fest. And so he'll be playing with Jackie Green on the main stage, and that's going to be a ton of fun as well. So lots of fun all around.
Yeah. Now, is this schedule? I mean, is it it's confirmed, or are you thinking you're going to add more as weeks go on?
Well, you never know. We always, thanks for asking, we always like to have a couple of surprises in our back pockets. So be on the lookout for that as we go through the summer. I'll tell you, some of the labs, to have Danny Clinch here, he'll be interviewing. I mean, Danny Clinch is just, of course, as most people know, one of the most amazing and iconic rock photographers in history. We have two of them, Jay Blakesberg, who will be doing a lab with Steve Poltz, and then Danny Clinch will be doing a lab with Jim James of My Morning Jacket, and then Jay Sweet of Newport Folk Festival will be doing an interview with Nathaniel Rateliff. So we have some really powerful, punchy labs that are going to be in that intimate space where you learn so much about the artists, the thought leaders, and hopefully about yourselves. So, yes, it's going to be an exciting year, and we hope to drop a few more names as we go along. But the lineup as it exists is something we're super proud of and can't wait to bring to our little community.
Okay. So tickets, you've got, you can do it by the day, you can do it for the all 3 days, you can do it for the lawn or for the reserve seating. Is that how it's going to work?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. If you want to go to the cabin on Friday night, I think the tickets start at like $15. If you want to go to the amphitheater, I think they start at $90, $95. And then you can do, and that's, you get 11 hours. I mean, yeah, you have a lot of hours of music there, right? That's why we have three different great acts in the lineup each night at the amphitheater. So those tickets for the lawn, I think they start at 95, 97, something like that with taxes. And then, if you want to do a full day, that you can just do a full day of labs and the amphitheater show if you can only go to like Friday or Saturday, or you can buy the 3-day all-in pass and you can either do that as a GA or a premiere. So we think that we are extremely competitive on our pricing if you compare us to all other festivals out there that, you really have to. I'm not saying these numbers are peanuts. I am saying, though, that we are extremely competitive with the amazing talent and the amount of talent that we have. So hopefully folks can find a price point that works for them and come and join us.
All right. So do the tickets then allow, is it just the amphitheater shows, or would it allow you to go to some of those labs and workshops?
Yes. If you buy a 3-day pass, you will be able to go to all the labs and the wellness activities and the amphitheater show and the nighttime shows. If you have the single day pass, you can do the labs and the amphitheater, and then you can add on some of the other things if you want to add to them. And you find that out when you get to checkout. It says, hey, would you like to add in, for instance, the dinner? Would you like to add in going to Friday night at the cabin? So it's fairly intuitive, I feel, although my generation and up sometimes gets a little hung up, including myself. But I think that it's fairly intuitive once you go in and you look around at the different price points and you see the different artist days. You can say, hey, I want to go all in on Friday. Then you choose a Summit pass for Friday, single day, and you can go, well, do I want to go GA or VIP? Well, I'll go Premier VIP. And then it says, would you like to do the following? So it's it leads you right through the process so that you can really make the Song Summit your way.
Okay. And I know it takes a lot of volunteers. Is there a way for people to learn more about
that? Yes, please. We love our volunteers and are so grateful for them. info@parkcitysongsummit.com is where you go to volunteer. We have had just an amazing response the last few years by our local volunteers. In fact, we have regional volunteers. We have people who come in from parts throughout the Intermountain region that want to volunteer every year. So please do. We would love to have you. And we cannot wait to see everyone this year in August, a little earlier this year. So our runway is a little shorter, Leslie, but please go out there and get your tickets and come join us and support Park City Song Summit, please. We'd love to have you.
Okay. People can get more information, parkcitysongsummit.com. Ben, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, just love is the answer in a crazy world. We try to bring something to this community that is different, that is healing, and something that is very heart forward and will hopefully move the human experience forward just a little bit. With all the crazy times that are out there in the world, we like to have a safe space where people can come and love on each other and hug and dance and be moved. So let's bring light and love into this world.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much for your time, Ben.
Have a great day, Leslie. Thank you so much.
Ben Anderson, again, co-founder of the Park City Song Summit. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the 2024 edition of the Park City Follies opens tomorrow night, and it has a three-week run this year. But tickets are few and far between. On the phone to tell us what to expect this year, I have one of the co-writers and MC of the event, Tom Clyde. He's joined by the new director of the Follies, Mark Conklin, with me in studio. Good morning to both of you.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Tom. The title of this year's show, Murder of the on the Silver Lake Express, can you give us a little bit of a preview of what we should expect?
Well, every now and then we try to shake it up a little bit. We've never done a murder mystery before. So we have a murder mystery that occurs on the theoretical post-Olympic train system that will move us seamlessly around Park City, slowly but comfortably on new train system.
Yeah, so pre-next Olympics, the idea that they've given us a whole bunch of money to get ready for the next Olympics, and we've piled it into a new electric train.
Okay. So, is it ever a problem for the writers of what to come up with, or is there so much to work with that it's difficult to decide what to cut?
little bit of both. It's always hard to know quite what the focus is, and we start, the writing group starts on this as early as September. It just takes a long, long time to pull together. So we're always guessing in September what will be the hot news item in April and May. And that's tricky. And so far we've been lucky and have been more or less on target.
Okay. Mark, you've stepped in for Paul Tan, who was longtime director of it. Maybe tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, this is your first year taking on the directing role.
Yeah, I started a little over 10 years ago, I think. I came in the band. I was playing drums in the band and then started doing a little singing in the pre-show for it. And I had a history of being an actor before coming to Park City, and sort of when that got out, they brought me up on stage, and so I've been with the troupe for quite a while, and really is a kind of a big group effort. A lot of people putting their time and effort into their and skills into this. And when Paul wanted to step down, he asked if it was something I'd like to do, and I thought it'd be fun.
So is it a bit like herding cats?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's a lot of fun cats. They're very energetic.
All right. So, Tom, at this point, it's all written. You guys are in rehearsals. I mean, you're opening night, so.
Yeah, we open tomorrow night, which is always kind of a panic experience because a normal show would be in rehearsal for, several weeks before going up on stage. And as a volunteer operation, we don't have several weeks. We can't ask that of cast members. They've had the script for quite a while and have been practicing the music and choreo and things on their own. But we're launching tomorrow, ready or not.
Yeah, we put it, and this is, as most of the years, it's certainly the years I was part of it, it really gets put down together in eight rehearsals.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty incredible. So, Mark, I've heard that the show is tech heavy. I guess I don't really know what that means, not have been part of the theater.
Yeah, well, actually, that's. I'm glad you asked about that. And the shows that we've done in the past, first of all, the show is sometimes the story has only been known just weeks before we started rehearsal. So there wasn't a lot of time to put together any kinds of sets or things. And this year, the Egyptian really has done an amazing thing to provide a lot of support for us. So we knew what the show was going to be about, at least the settings were going to be about. So they had more time to think about putting together scenery and props and costumes and things like that. And this year also we have the new artistic director the Egyptian Jake Larrabee, who has been really terrific as a tech and designer. He's a multi-talented guy, and they've just provided so much support for us. So tech heavy, meaning you'll see more settings, you'll see more full costumes, things like that.
I heard the band is on a movable platform too.
Oh yeah, they're fantastic, and they are, and they're completely wireless. It's amazing, so they can move all over the stage. It's really fun.
Okay, that's asking for trouble. No.
No, not at all.
Well,
bring it on.
It goes back to the good old days when bands were fully acoustic and not plugged in. But anyway, there's no Bluetooth radiation to have the front row glowing, I think, by the time we get it done. But the tech stuff happening is just exciting. We've always been so down to the wire that usually on opening night we're out there on stage with props that have wet paint on them. And this year, mostly thanks to Jake's effort, we got on top of that. And so it feels richer. It just feels like a lot more complete performance. So that's very exciting to see unfold.
All right. Well, the Follies is presented by the Park Record. What does that mean exactly? Do they give you some kind of funding to help with this?
Well, there's been a long history there. It used to be, I mean, you go back to the earliest show. We did one show one weekend, and that was it. And we had a hard time selling tickets. And the Park Record has been with us right from the beginning, with a lot of advertising support. And of course, the last several years, we haven't really needed a lot of advertising support, but they continue to be with us and have donated some coverage that way. So they've been a good partner through the years. It's when the product is sold out, you don't need to buy a lot of ad space, but that's a good problem to have.
Well, given that there are a couple of Folly-ready news stories involving the owners of the Park Record, do you have to back off or do you go full throttle here?
I think we're not letting that interfere. I think we're pretty much covering it as we see it. And, that broke late enough that it's not a major park show. But there were some tweaks to adjust around it. It's there and certainly part of it.
Yeah.
And I know you do make changes during a run. I mean, and that just based on what might be happening last minute?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you never know. This is a wonderfully weird town and wonderfully weird time of year, and almost anything can happen. The zoning appeal on the controversial house is happening the 30th, so for our last weekend, we may have a different set of circumstances than we have now. So you never know, and yeah, we adjust as we go through the show, news happens, and we try to stay current.
Yeah,
I mean, we're very, very focused on what's going on in Park City. I mean, I've told friends that, I'm working on this show, but, if you don't live in Park City, you're not going to get half the jokes. Anything that's happening here that's getting reported in the news, I think is fair game.
All right. Well, I know it wouldn't be possible without the team of writers. So, Tom, let us know who we can credit for that.
It's an absolutely magic collaboration. This year, the writing crew was, I did kind of the bulk of it with Terry Moffat, who does the song lyrics, and people miss how important that is, that the lyrics track the plot, and often we'll cancel page after page of dialogue in the play and move it into one of Terry's songs. So Terry's involvement has been great. We have Josh Mann and Andy Sear, who are both full of creative energy and great ideas. Also a lot more tech savvy than I am, so they can produce things that are you know, great backdrop pieces that I would struggle at with a cut and paste operation. We've had Mark involved in the creative process right from the get-go. And we started that with Paul a few years ago, and it's really good to have the director involved in it from the beginning, because we can go through and work on the scene, and he'll say, wait a minute, I don't understand how that goes on stage. How does this work physically? So that short circuits a lot of problems. And then this year we've added a new guy, which is what he calls himself, is the new guy, Scott Greenberg, who's had a lot of really fun creative suggestions and a little bit different perspective on it. It's been a very good writing group. Enormous amount of trust among everybody. You can throw an idea out there and, you know, it'll get accepted or shot down or beaten up on, and everybody's okay with that. You know, you just work through it.
Okay. And I'm guessing many of the actors involved are also returning from years past?
Yeah, I think we have, well, you know better than I do on that, Mark, but yeah, I think we have most of them back.
I think almost everybody actually in the ensemble to this year are have been involved previously, and it really is it's really a tighter group this year in that it's a more focused group. They're on stage most of the show, sometimes we've had over 20 people, and we have about half that. Well, not quite, it's a great fun ensemble.
Okay, let's see. As I mentioned, tickets aren't easy to come by. Looking at the website right now, it looks like there are some tickets for the final two performances, May 4th, Saturday, and Sunday, May 5th. Can one of you give us an update on that?
Yeah, I talked with the box office people, Jan Silva, there yesterday. And she said there are a few scattered seats that last weekend, but also that there's a fair amount of turnover. People's plans change, and, you know, somebody will have bought four or five tickets and find they can't use them for whatever reason. So there's a wait list, and people ought to call the box office and, you know, if they're having a hard time finding tickets, get on the wait list and check that pretty regularly and see how that works out. Also, if you have tickets you're not able to use, please turn them back in, because people are trying to get them. I mean, it's a great problem to have. I mean, we're adding three more performances this year, so that's 1,000 more seats, and they're still hard to come by. So that's kind of overwhelming, but If people will turn back in, I think most people can find a seat when they want one.
In the past, I've known that friends have come up even on the day of and just walked up, and because you know, people don't show up at the last minute, or they cancel at the last minute. So I've known a lot of people who've just walked up and gotten in, gotten lucky. And, you know, if you don't get in, you can go have a beer someplace.
Okay, all right. Well, we're always looking forward to you guys. Thanks for your time this morning. Anything else you wanted to add real quick?
Just thanks to the cast and also the community that supports this adventure. It's a big project and a fun project, but it only works because the community likes it.
Yeah. Okay. All right, you guys, thanks. And again, good luck. Well, the Utah Wellbeing Survey is asking Park City residents to share their perspectives on mental, physical, and social health. The survey ends April 30th. When Parkites last took the Utah Wellbeing Survey in 2022, they expressed concerns about growth, traffic, and climate change. The survey, which is conducted in partnership with the League of Cities and Towns and Utah State University, seeks to assess city residents' satisfaction with assorted elements of life. Dozens of Utah cities participate, allowing researchers to compare and contrast data in different areas. The 2022 survey found that Park City residents worried the most about overdevelopment compared to other communities. According to USU, Park City is one of 47 communities participating in this year's survey. The questions cover a variety of topics, including cultural opportunities, family life, living standards, safety, and transportation. The roughly 10-minute survey is open to full and part-time Park City residents. All responses are anonymous. Residents ages 18 and older are asked to participate. The survey can be found online at kpcw.org. And a reminder that more than 400 national parks are opening their gates for free this weekend for its second fee-free day of 2024. In honor of National Park Week, all National Park Service sites will offer free admission this Saturday, April 20th. The entrance fee waiver for fee-free days does not cover amenity or user fee activities such as camping, boat launches, transportation, or special tours. This include Utah's Arches, Bryce Canyon, Canyonlands, and Zion National Parks. There are six free days this year, with the next one happening June 19th in honor of Juneteenth.